Southeast England, well, another predominantly dry day, not quite as sunny as we've seen through recent days, and with more of a breeze, not quite as warm either. There's also a chance of one or two light and brief showers through the afternoon, but some will avoid this altogether, and through the afternoon as well, the sunshine will start to break through some of that cloud, lifting temperatures between 11 and 14. As for the rest of the week, it's set to turn a bit colder later on, and all of us will see some heavy rain, Mairead.
No, I didn't ask for that at all. Thank you very much, Matt Taylor, there at the BBC Weather Centre. This is Radio 4. Now, in a change to our scheduled Book of the Week, a chance to hear Tony Benn in his own words as he reads extracts from Free at Last, his diaries that span 10 momentous years, from the first Gulf War in 1991 to his last days as the Honourable Member for Chesterfield.
This is dedicated to Caroline, to all our grandchildren, and to future generations, in the hope that they may make a better world for themselves than we have been able to make for them. Wednesday, the 16th of January, 1991, I received a call at 11:40 p.m. in the evening saying, "Switch on ITN, the war's begun." I switched on, and there was the report from CNN staff in Baghdad describing the bombing of the city. They were in the Al Rashid Hotel, where I had stayed a few weeks ago, and they were looking out of the window and saying, "It's like a firework display on the 4th of July." While all around them people were being killed. It was simply terrible. Sunday, the 20th of January, 1991. The bombing of Iraq is going on a huge scale, with twice the weight of bombs that dropped on Hiroshima. And there's a population of 4 million people, so there must be massive casualties. The whole thing is so awful. Parliament is no use in a conflict. As soon as there's a real conflict or pressure, miners strike, whopping, war, the two front benches hunch together like anything. Wednesday, the 30th of January, 1991. Picked up my message master, which is my latest toy and buzzes when there are messages. The trouble is I didn't have any messages, so I rang up and left myself a lot and they kept arriving. Sunday, the 3rd of February, 1991, went to the demonstration in Hyde Park, where the speakers were a German Rear Admiral, the Bishop of St. Andrews, Billy Bragg, somebody from the Green Party, Terry Marsland, and myself. Some Iraqis who had families in Baghdad were nearly in tears. Friday, the 8th of February, 1991, heavy snowfall, about 6 to 8 inches of snow, the garden like fairyland, London brought to a standstill, buses and trains cancelled and stopped. I'm wondering about my relationship with Labour MPs. I get on with Tory MPs because you don't expect to agree with them, so you just have a jocular chat with them. But with Labour MPs, I still have this deep sense of disappointment, I think, rather like Enoch Powell must have been when he was in the House. If you talked to him, he was friendly, but otherwise he looked isolated. I dare say I should treat Labour MPs as if they're just people you know and not really worry about their opinions because you can't shift them. Thursday the 28th of February, 1991, overnight the ceasefire was announced by George Bush and that was the big news. Went into the House and asked a question of the Prime Minister, and I'm glad I did, because you can't run away at a moment like this, although Pat Duffy, the Labour member, had congratulated Neil Kinnock and said we had our faint hearts, pointing in my direction, and the House cheered him like anything. Sunday, the 3rd of March, 1991. At the Campaign Strategy Committee, Michael Meacher told me he thinks Peter Mandelson wants to get rid of Kinnock and take over the party with Tony Blair as his deputy, which I think is a ludicrous conspiracy. Such a party would have no appeal to anybody. Wednesday, the 3rd of April, 1991, Stansgate. Now I'm 66. I have to think what I'm going to do with the rest of my life. I hereby resolve I will not do more than vote against the things on Labour's National Executive that I think are wrong. There's no point in fighting the party, certainly not before the election. Secondly, I've got to give more attention to Chesterfield because the books, the speeches, the Gulf War campaigns have been an excuse for not doing as much in Chesterfield as I should have done. Sunday, the 5th of May, 1991. Hilary, my second son, brought his boys over. Michael is now 9 and James is 7. They were watching something on the television where a couple were kissing passionately, and they rolled on the floor, turning away from the television, saying, "How embarrassing!" Then James said to me very earnestly, "You know, Dan, they must be very good actors to agree to do that." Thursday, the 4th of July, 1991, Geoffrey Goodman, a very old friend and distinguished Labour correspondent, arrived at 11 and I had brushed the garden and mowed the lawn. He was terribly friendly and we talked about the old days. I said I was anxious to mend my fences with old comrades with whom I'd fallen out. He said I thought you would have made a marvellous leader. I was sorry that wasn't really what you wanted, which was the kindest way of saying you threw it all away. Sunday, the 28th of July, 1991. Only just over 30% of Labour supporters now think Kinnock is any good, and Major streaks ahead in terms of popularity because of his charm. The Labour Party now is politically bankrupt. I think Kinnock will be remembered as the man who destroyed the Labour Party, and yet the individual rank-and-file members and the trade union leaders go along with it because they think he's the only man who can lead them. It's an extraordinary historical disaster. It may be that Kinnock himself has concluded that the Labour Party is a dead duck, just as Gorbachev concluded that the Communist Party in the Soviet Union was a dead duck. Wednesday, the 31st of July, Chesterfield. I went to the Mines Service Centre at Dukmonton all day, the old Markham workshops. It used to be a huge centre employing over 1,000 people, one of 5 workshops. Now it only employs 453. I'm always overcome with depression at the way in which our skill and craft have been allowed to run down. Most of the workers are older workers because they're not taking on any apprentices this year, but they are a workforce of enormous skill. Tuesday, the 17th of September, 1991. Caroline spent all her free time finishing her Keir Hardie book, and for about an hour, until 1 o'clock in the morning, I read the remaining pages following the death of Keir Hardie. I do find it absolutely riveting. She has totally changed my perception of Keir Hardie from a sort of prophetic figure standing head and shoulders above everyone else to a man who was a bit of a loner, an agitator, who liked doing meetings and making speeches, but at enormous cost to his wife Lily. Friday, the 20th of September, 1991, Paul Foote rang me. He said, "Tony, I've got some marvellous news. We've got hold of the full list of 22,000 names on the Economic League's blacklist. This is the list of troublemakers that is circulated to those companies that subscribe. I think he said there were 20 MPs on it, and I replied, "I hope I'm one of them." And he said, "You are, but it says Caroline Benn, and then after that, Tony Benn." Friday, the 18th of October, 1991. I cancelled my Chesterfield surgery because I'm so concerned about Mother. She's in a coma now. I found a camp bed in the corridor and brought it into her room and simply lay down and went to sleep. I woke up at 5:15 and stood up and looked over the river, and it was absolutely beautiful. There was hardly any traffic. It was dark. The stars were out. The sky was clear. And I could see all the places where Mother's life had really been spent since she came to London to see her own father in Parliament in 1910. Monday, the 21st of October, 1991. At 2:10, the phone rang and they said, "This is St. Thomas's Hospital. I'm afraid your mother died about 10 minutes ago." Mother's life was a really remarkable one, an active one, and a long and progressive one. Considering she was not allowed by her parents any sort of education, she became a great scholar and put an awful lot into life, and everyone who knew her liked her very much. Wednesday, the 6th of November, 1991, Robert Maxwell is dead. His body was found off his yacht near the Canary Islands, and now that he's dead and can't issue writs against people, everyone is free to say what they really think. Maxwell was a really nasty, crooked man. I find it very difficult to say anything good about him. But, of course, there were tributes from Kinnock and Ashdown and Major. Maxwell, I believe, financed Neil Kinnock's private office. Why? Was he really trying to get a Labour government elected, or to wreck the Labour Party so it wouldn't get elected? Wednesday, the 15th of January, 1992. To the Week in Politics party, and as I left there, William Cash, that tall, rather elegant Tory MP who is a constitutional lawyer and a committed Thatcherite, said to me, "As you know, Tony, I'm very close to Mrs. Thatcher, and she often speaks most warmly of you, presumably because I've opposed a federal Europe." He said, "You have only to look at this place, look at this building, all this would be thrown away." And all of a sudden you realise that their opposition to a federal Europe is not democratic at all. They want to hang on to the privileges of a feudal Britain. I have got nothing in common with them. Saturday, the 1st of February, 1992, I went and bought a new telephone fax machine, which has an answering machine, and if you leave it on, you can receive faxes without having to adjust it. It was quite expensive, but it does mean I can send out press releases. I've got so much equipment at the moment, and I can't use it all. The problem of training on new equipment is something I had underestimated. Saturday, the 22nd of February, Chesterfield. I did a surgery all morning from 9.30 to 2 o'clock. Then I went shopping. I bought myself a little tape recorder, a very cheap inflatable mattress and sleeping bag because Hillary and Sally and their children are coming to stay tonight, and I thought I might just as well spend £40 on getting something I'll be able to use again and sleep on the floor rather than book into a hotel. The grandchildren arrived and I blew up my mattress, unrolled my sleeping bag, and I thought I'd just try and see what it's like. Then I went sound asleep when I was supposed to be babysitting. When Hillary and Sally came in at 9:15, Michael and James said to them, "We think Dan Dan's all right." It was really very funny, but whether they'll ever trust me to babysit again, I just don't know. Friday, the 28th of February, 1992. I did a bit of telephone canvassing. One number was a wrong number. When I rang, I said, "Is that Mr. Jennings?" And a woman said, "No, this is the pizza parlour in Hasland. Is that Mr. Ben?" "Yes." "Oh, we're all for you." It was really smashing. I hope to God there's an election soon. Wednesday, the 11th of March, 1992, on the 1 o'clock news, Major appeared outside number 10 to announce the election for April the 9th. Thursday, the 12th of March, 1992. With the election announced, I went to the Commons. At 11.30, we had the Parliamentary Labour Party meeting. Jack Cunningham said we had the best prepared campaign ever. We're on the way to victory. We must have confidence in each other, confidence created by Neil. Then Neil spoke. He was grinning and strident and raucous. I have to say that, and he got a huge standing ovation. Tuesday, the 17th of March, 1992. Chesterfield. I went over to see Tom Valens, my agent in the office, a very efficient man, Tom Valens. Margaret is organising the canvassing and the distribution of leaflets, and it really is a tremendously efficient setup. I must say the impact of the election on the electorate at the moment is absolutely zero. There are three men in their 40s, a grey man Major, a bald man Kinnock, a macho man Ashdown, going round using every sort of slogan about handing Britain back to the British, empowering people, and a better future and a new and better Britain. It's just sloganising without any content at all. If I were asked to guess now, I would say Labour will just pull it off. I think Kinnock will be Prime Minister.
History, of course, has other ideas. Tony Benn was reading from Free at Last, his diaries 1991 to 2001. The producer was Jane Ray. Thank you. This is BBC Radio 4. Now, the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Tuesday, the 18th of March. There are warnings of gales in Shannon, Rockall, Malin, Hebrides, Bailey, Faroes and South East Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800. New low expected southern Norway 995 by 1800 Tuesday. Azores high 1030, slow moving with little change. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours. Viking north at Sira. Westerly becoming cyclonic 4 or 5, occasionally 6. Rain moderate or poor. South at Sira, 40s, Cromarty, Forth, Tyne, Dogger, Fisher, Jermyn Bight. Westerly or southwesterly, 5 to 6.